Hello. You're about to listen to Conversations. But before you do, please make sure to follow on all streaming platforms. That's including iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Audible. You name it, we're on it. Make sure you subscribe and follow. Welcome to episode 6 of Conversations. We want to apologize for the unintentional sabbatical that we've all taken, but life gets in the way. Anyway, this is the unofficial, but right now it should actually just be the official Versailles-related podcast, but that's something for the legal department to figure out. Anyway, I am Philippe, Duc d'Orléans himself, Alexander Vlahos, and I'm joined, as always, by my brother,
Louis XIV, Le Roi. I need to find a different way of saying that.
Yeah,
I'm George. Hi, everyone. And so, to celebrate the 10-year anniversary of our show, we are inviting on special guests each episode to help us take a deep dive into the hit Canal Plus, Netflix, and BBC TV show.
Behind the scenes, conducting their own Grand Levier, is our very own personal pocket bon ton, producer Nicky Erbel.
This week's guest has been begging us to come on the show. She is the beloved, the adored, the utterly admired Sophie Madison Jaizani.
Oh, wow, what an introduction. I haven't had one of them in years. Thanks for making me feel relevant, boys.
No, it was just, I always write the intros, Mads, and it was once when I sent you the request to come on and you were like, I've been waiting to come on. I was like, that is the perfect way to introduce you.
Yeah, I kept seeing the episodes being released, and I know you obviously had your rhyme and reason of who is next on the show, but it got to like episode 4 and 5 and I was like, I might never be asked. They might not be interested in what I've got to say. And I had a bit of an insecure moment, like, well, I've got to let that one go.
That is
but thank you. Very excited.
Well, we're excited.
We are so happy to have you on because what's been so apparent to, you know, we've had Ev, we've had Sarah Winter, we've had that, you know, we've had some amazing people come on already. But what I've noticed about the sort of core group of all of us that started the show, was that we all look so young and we are young and but you in particular.
Oh my gosh.
Are a little baby from the Madison that's staring in front of me now on Zoom.
But I know.
Alex told me on one of the other podcasts how old you were when we started, and I don't think I knew that. Like, confirm. Well, confirm for us.
Yeah, confirm your age when you started the site.
I had just turned 18.
Yeah.
My
or
God.
17. Wow. I think I was 17 when I was sort of auditioning. But then, you know, got cast because it was better that I was, 18.
Wow.
Which, yeah, that's crazy. I mean, in my head, I thought I was so mature. And I think I had, I'd been working bits and bobs and I'd kind of moved from home. So I thought I was really mature and grown. But then when asked to sort of reminisce and look back on it, the feelings I remember a lot of feelings and emotions.
Right.
And I just remember feeling so insecure, young, didn't know what I was doing. It was sort of that age where I was going into womanhood, but I was still, like, as you said, I looked so young. I was, like, I was just a baby. And
I mean,
I had
you
no
look
idea
no different now, to
on.
Be honest. I'll be honest.
Because I have a little story to was that, which is kind of related, kind of not, about Noemi. We're going to get Noemi on for episode 10, I hope, for season 1. But like, Noemi flat out lied to my face about how old she was.
Did she?
Flat out lied. and flatter. I'm not going to, I don't know if she's listening. Hi, Noemi, if you are. But it was, she told, she lied to Simon and David and to the team about how old she was.
To be younger or older?
She played herself off younger than she was, yeah. So I was always like made to believe that you and Noemi were sort of in similar age. And then it came out, and much later on she came out and she said that she was 21. And then I think that was halfway through season one that I found out the truth. But what it made me, rather than make me go like, Noemi, I was like, oh my God, Maddie's a baby.
Yeah, now Maddie really looks
now
like
Maddie
baby.
Really is, I mean, on her own, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because it's strange. I didn't know how old you were, George. And I remember you telling me at the Versailles con that we did. Mm-hmm. And I thought you guys were like, how old you are now? I couldn't believe that you were like, how old were you, George? Like 21 or something? Or
No. I was 24. But yeah, we've
24.
Talked about
24.
How, like,
yeah. But yeah. I mean, I thought even 24, now that I'm 28 going on 29, 24 seems so young to me. But I thought you boys were like,
old.
Just the old,
really
cool.
Old.
I mean, Anna was like, I was looking up to Anna, but she was also still young. We were all going through it.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre. Yeah, I just thought you guys were like, you know.
I think the intimidating part of it is just being on a set that big. Like at the end of it's not about like, you know, how many words you have to say in the right order. The thought of me being 24, being on that set, and then you being like turning 18.
And also, like, what's crazy. Great is about watching these episodes back is that you can't tell. And this is the highest compliment I can give you, Maz, especially in season one, is that all your it's not like, and I hope this doesn't come across as condescending. I really don't mean for it to be, but there's because you're portraying someone that's 16, right, in the show that Sophie's 16. There could come across as the idea that they could have gone for someone like a child actor or someone that was, you know, that thing that, you know.
Sure.
And you are brilliant as you, because we'll talk about it much later, but you go through so many, Sophie, the character, goes through so many different versions of Sophie through season one, but until you sort of run away into the woods with Fabienne at the end of season three or whatever, like there is so much to go through. But like, I watched those first six episodes and I'm just sort of, I'm kind of in awe of you, because I'm like similar to what George is saying, I would never be able to. I just wouldn't. The scale of the show, the money of the show, the brevity and the just the magnitude of the whole thing. I was petrified as a 26-year-old, you know?
Had you done stuff? You said you'd done stuff before. Like, what stuff had you?
I've done really small roles. I've done episodes on a couple of different shows. And I backed myself a lot and I was hungry for it. And I thought I was okay. But then, like you said, Alex, the magnitude of the show, I mean, it was just so much to take in. Yeah. Oh my God. But the thing that softened it all and helped me through that awkward age that I did feel inside was the instant bonds that we had. And I'm sure people have said this on the other episodes, is that it just felt so fun immediately, so that you really could get to work. And although there were really tough days, I mean, I'm sure for all of us, we were all up for a laugh. And I think that was just the most memorable thing that I have, is just feeling at ease, because people were just, they just made it easy for you. You know, they wanted to get to know you and make you giggle. And
it did help that we were all talking about like a similar age, like as the number, but in terms of experience and on jobs and stuff, that we all sort of like, especially in season one. I always look back in season one as a magical foundation to building the rest of the seasons with everyone. Because that massive gap between season one and season two, I just couldn't wait to get back with you all. You know, because I was because it was friends first and work colleagues second. That's what.
Yes, exactly.
I feel a little bit like I'm jumping on the train by being part of the fun crew. I remember Alex, like, we were probably 3 months into filming and Alex was like, did you just smile? It's the first time you've smiled. But I hold my hands up. I can't say that on the podcast, but way too far up my own. I took myself very seriously.
We won't go into because it's a different name for a different podcast, but myself and Maddie and Anna spent many a night not turning up, you know, like having to not sleeping very well and turning up the next set. Thank God that someone like George Blagden was the lead of the show, right, Mance?
Jesus.
Absolutely. We decided to not bother inviting you to those events because we knew that you were the first one.
Someone
in
needed
and
to
I
turn up on set
last.
On time. So there we go. Yes, exactly.
What were they thinking?
Yeah, but I'm glad you did loosen up, George. You know, we had some nights.
Episode
near the end of season three.
Episode 8 of season 3, yeah.
Mad, do you remember your casting? We always talk about like it being 10 years and stuff. And I always find that the listeners and the people that watch on Patreon, that they really find the idea of, because the casting process of the show, like we had Sarah Winter on the show who originally auditioned for Henriette, Evan himself originally auditioned for Philippe. What was it like with you? Were you going up for something? Was the script different or was it always Sophie for this part?
I got a straight offer. No, I'm kidding.
Love it.
No, I didn't. But the audition process. So I did one tape, if I remember correctly. I'm pretty sure I did the first audition was a tape. And I got a response pretty quickly that people wanted to meet me, the team, producers, director. And I did an audition. I had about 4 or 5 lines. It was a very quick conversation with who would play Amira, who was already cast. And I think I got a call a couple of days after saying that I'd gotten the role. It was within sort of a week, maybe 2 weeks.
Wow, so quick.
And obviously they were looking for someone who had similarities to Amira. So obviously that maybe played in my favor a little bit. But at that time when I hadn't really worked, I really was like, wow, I'm good. I'm going to be massive really soon. Because it just was like, what? I got it. Like, you know, usually it's sort of that long process of not hearing and then maybe hearing, maybe not, but you just forget it. You move on.
Yeah.
And this was sort of a quick process. And then I was in for fittings. And so, yeah, I just remember feeling on top of the world and so grateful for it being my first reoccurring role and sort of integral role. It was amazing. And all of my friends and family who, especially my friends who aren't in the industry at all where I'm from, this was like, whoa, you're moving to Paris. This is incredible. I just wish I could do it all over again. It was great. I couldn't believe it.
That's amazing. Like, because I think like some of us obviously felt like, George, you would just come off Vikings or you were still filming Vikings well and you went into it. And I was on Broadway with doing Macbeth. And yeah, there was a sense of like, what? Like, how has this happened? Like, my dream was like, oh, remember that job that you auditioned for? You got it. And you're moving to Paris for 8 months. And I was just like, no, there's a catch here. There has to be something. I'm surely you've got to do more, you know, like, comparisons. I don't know, George, how you when you got Vikings, but like when I auditioned for Merlin, I had like 5 rounds, 2 screen tests.
Wow.
And even at the table read, my agent said to me, they still could get rid of you. You know, and that felt really like when I finally got the job, it was like, yes, like I feel like I worked for it. This one I didn't even think about. So the idea that it happens like so quickly is, I think it's a testament to David and Simon, but also it is kind of scary, right?
Yeah, yep. I mean, I've not had that happen since. It's been so quick and lovely. So, yeah, it's a testament to those two. I really appreciate it. And Jalil too. You know, he definitely believed in me a lot. And it was just such a joy. I mean, there was no, I didn't remember feeling any immense stress or, oh my God, I really want it. You know, I obviously wanted it, but that's such pressure you feel and you almost become desperate for it.
Yeah.
I think it just was such a joyous audition process that like that just doesn't really happen often.
Yeah.
And you touched on a little bit of the meeting Amira. Talk to us about that. Talk to us about your, you spend most of season one really with doing your scenes in a certain room, like your quarters with Amira. You have occasional scenes with Evan, you have occasional scenes with Ty later on towards the end of the season. But like, it's mostly just two-handers between you and your mum.
This is going to be so fun because we've got one side of the story already.
We've pre-recorded Amira for episode 9, so she's already slandered you to death. And I know later on you season 2 and season 3 it becomes very much you've got friends around you and you have lots of great scenes with Ty, but mostly season 1 is just you and your mum. What was it like? Work, did you know who Amira was, and how did that come about?
I obviously before meeting did some research and realized that she, you know, was a well-known French actress who had done, you know, lots of really reputable work. The first meet was exciting because Amira didn't have children, and so she really wanted to get to know me and understand everything about me and figure out that mother-daughter relationship that we both needed to understand. So it was important that we both knew each other and got comfortable with each other. So I think for the first couple of weeks, or really throughout the whole, you know, all of our scenes in our spare time, she really just wanted to get to know me. She was so inquisitive. And, you know, being so young, I was so in my head and shy. And it might not have seemed that way, but I was really, like, nervous to speak to these adults who wanted to get to know me. So I probably wasn't asking her any questions, but I just was sort of like, yeah.
One-way conversation.
Okay, you know, one-way convo, you know, sort of not really knowing what to say because of the nerves. But she was really amazing. I mean, when I would go into her trailer, we'd run lines, we'd have such a giggle, and she would just really understand who I was. And it was a really comforting time, because considering we were only in scenes together, it was important that we had a really good bond. And we did. It was great. And she had a great sense of humor. And I remember us just in scenes, just dancing and laughing and being loud and probably annoying the directors. But it had to be fun, you know, but it was really great. It was a nice first introduction to the show, and having, you know, her sort of lead the way and understand the film industry way more than I did, and kind of helping me figure it out. But we had a great laugh. I mean, she's a great human.
I've brought this up a couple of times, but like I always remember in episode 1 of the introduction of Sophie and Beatrice, Simon or David, or, you know, both of them had written that they were like the Kardashians of Versailles. That was kind of the main stage direction of it. In terms of like your character development, in terms of like building, not necessarily just your relationship with Amira, but like in terms of just like your life in court and like the backstory and stuff, was Jaleel, Christophe, was it Thomas Van Sant, was it all of them, or was it just, were you just trusting on the script to develop your relationship and create Sophie for the screen? Because, you know, like who guides you in that, or was it just you and Amira?
I think a lot of it was down to us, for sure. I think Jaleel definitely helped. I think he had a very clear vision of what he wanted. I don't know. I just remember feeling like this was a really integral, my own storyline that was away from kind of the King's storyline and that what was in history. And I think having that knowledge of like, I was proud to have this own juicy storyline on the side that I think together we just were like, oh, what can we do with this? And it was kind of left up to us. I don't really remember any meetings or sit downs or conversations where it was written for itself. You know, we needed our papers. We weren't part of the court, and that's juicy enough.
Yeah, for sure.
And it was just, we just made it. We made it our own. It was great fun.
Of like of all the sort of subplots of season 1, I think it's my most enjoyable, the one I enjoyed most.
good England, here, George. Good England.
Yeah, like, because it's got like you said, like purpose and drive over lots of episodes, and a lot of characters go through Beatrice and Sophie. Actually, like in this rewatch, yes. I'm like the Chevalier, Henriette. Yeah. Anyway, I've made my point.
I think you're right.
It's true, though.
I think you're right. It's also I was just about to add, like it's adding to what George said, is that they're fictional characters, whereas like George obviously is playing, you know, the most famous, you know, French monarch ever, you know, and then you know you've got Philippe and you've got Henriette, you've got all these Chevalier, real historical bon ton, real historical people, where there's a sort of sense. We've talked about this briefly, but like there's a sense from what we played was that there was a duty for us, you know.
Yes.
You know, the tour of Versailles ending on that massive portrait of actually seeing these people next to each other and realizing that they're real people was like, for me, was the biggest like, oh fuck, like I can't coast this. I can't just take a punt. Like I'm having to do due diligence and do respect to this person because this person exists. And then you talk to some people like, you know, like you've got these Cassels, you've got the Claudines of the world, you've got the Jacques of the world. And weirdly, the plot lines and the storylines are like as integral as the real ones that are, you know, that are obviously skewed from history. But like the fact that, you know, you've got Fabian, Beatrice and Sophie kind of intertwined with each other, and Jacques towards the end, and they're all completely fictional. Like it's a testament to the writing, I think, that that you're not relying so much or leaning so much on the history aspect of it. Does that make sense?
It does, absolutely. I mean, there's not really much wiggle room for you guys. You're kind of following what happened in history. And we had historians, right, sort of go through things and make sure it was all kind of correct and...
For sure, yeah. Matthew Devinia was very much, you know, I think looking back, Matthew Devinia only really popped up when there was Louis and Philippe scenes, because he was like, these people actually existed. He's like, he's not rocking up, to just be interested in Beatrice and Sophie or Cassel and Moncourt.
I'm glad I didn't have those eyes on me. That's probably helped me a lot, because being, you know, my first role and not sort of having that pressure that you guys did and being able to sort of play around with it and make it my own. It was the perfect role for me at the time, for sure.
Were you contracted for three, or was it always one? Going back to it being fictional, I'm always fascinated about the people that played the fictional characters. Because I've even asked Ty at certain points, like, did you ever fear for your job? Like, just because.
I did.
They could just kill you off because, well, you didn't really exist. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like I knew that if we got season two and then into three, like I'm pretty safe. Like Philippe, I know Philippe lived until he was 66, so I'm good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I got contracted for two.
Right.
And then I wasn't supposed to come back for the third.
Right.
And then I think I just charmed my way.
Oh, was it you that was like, hey,
no,
hey,
I think my agents started to poke around a little bit. And
sure.
Then I got an email like, yeah, of course she's coming back. Yeah, or it wasn't supposed to be. And then I think they changed their mind later on into the writing process that like, okay, come on, this is
because I know we're jumping
when you,
ahead.
When you suggested mates rates.
What's that?
When you suggested mates rates. Yeah, yeah. You were like,
jumping
one season, get one free.
Go on, George. Sorry, we keep interrupting each other.
No,
George,
I'm making stupid, fatuous jokes. Please continue.
No, I like the jokes.
Me too, me too. More jokes. Less.
That's what I'm cracking.
I always remembered that you have massively jumping ahead, but I know I told you before we were doing this that we would talk about all of Sophie. Is that I always remember you have this, I think it's season three. Season three or season two, where you walk into through the golden gates of Versailles, you have a really kick-ass entrance into the season. I think it's season three.
I think it's season three.
Yeah, and you're banished and stuff like that, and you have
and
your cloak on, and the gates open, and you're sort of coming through, and then you take off your cloak, and people, and it's like, it's yeah.
I
was like,
I
was like, that's what you want.
That is what you want.
Yeah, you want them to, you know, in the script writing meeting, they're like, how best can we reintroduce this character? And they're like, through the Golden Gates of Versailles. Just
I know, considering they weren't going to bring me back.
True,
they really
that's
gave
what
me
I mean.
Great like, entrance. God,
right,
let's
well,
give us
listen,
something.
Why don't we plot through episode 6? Maddie, have you watched episode 6?
I have, yes.
Thank God.
This probably, I think this could have been maybe my second time watching episode 6. It could potentially have been
my
first.
But like, how are you with watching yourself back? Is that something that's enjoyable for you?
I do now, but Versailles was an absolute no-go, which after I watched episode 6, I actually really want to watch the show, which I feel terrible saying out loud. I know it's amazing, but I just couldn't. I literally would rather.
Who was it, George? Was it Ev from Ev on episode 5 was like, he was like, it's a really good show.
Well, I mean, I've said that every episode.
Yeah, George's face has always been the most surprised.
Episode's actually good, isn't it? No, like, Evan, I remember in his episode also was like, you know, I was really, I was great.
He is so good. I think after watching some of your boys' scenes as well, both of you and Alex and Ev, I think I was like, after watching episode 6, it's like, oh, these relationships are so interesting.
So have you never seen the whole show? Like, have you never watched the whole show? You've not seen any of it?
I've seen bits. I remember the script quite well, so I know what happened.
Just your bits.
But
you were there with the script, just fast forwarding to your bits.
You haven't.
I do a lot of that, but now after watching it with my family member.
That is a really honest admission sometimes.
It's great.
To be like,
I can't lie.
We all do it.
I also think this is really fascinating is that if you record something and there's almost a year or say like six to nine months before that thing comes out, like on screen, I'm deeply fascinated about, I know at the time I've known the script really well. And then I'm like, I wonder if it is as scripted. So I'm really
sure.
That's where my line is. Like, I'm curious to know, like, there's an example.
How many of my scenes have they cut?
Basically, yeah. Yeah. Am I even still in it? You know,
sure.
I always remember, like, this is the biggest example was that I was in episode 1. The introduction of Sanditon was me coming out of this water of the sea as a sort of Byron-esque painter, and it was the first 2 pages, and I'm watching episode 1 of season 2 of Sanditon, and I'm like, oh my God, they've cut me. And it's like, and honestly, it's about 25 minutes until they introduced me. And they put all my scenes roughly together. So they didn't cut any of the scenes, but they just moved my introduction to much later in the episode. But can you imagine my heart was in my mouth. I was like, and this is the bit where I come on. There was nothing. I was like,
you're having a screening at your house with the neighbours and everyone.
Popcorn.
Don't. I've told you my Wrath of the Titans story, haven't I? Very quickly, we're doing a Versailles podcast, obviously, but like it was the first time that something had come out that I was on screen. Like I'd been out of drama school 3 months. I was shooting the Les Mis film. Like nothing had been seen, and get an invite to Leicester Square Odeon. I take all my family and my bit is with Sam Worthington and I do this 2-page scene. I'm like, after they do the underwater bit before his dream sequence, that's me. So look out for it. We're all there, 12 of us lined up at the Odeon, popcorn.
No.
And the sea thing comes, and then his dream comes, and I'm like, huh. And you can just see all of my family, like, up and down the road being like,
oh, no.
See? No. He's been he's completely shot from the film. Still
took,
on my IMDb.
No. You took 12
Soldier
people.
One.
You took the whole, you took the second, like, it was, second cousins.
It was like all
and
my family
neighbors.
Were like,
he's in the cinema in Leicester Square. We gotta go. It's a big Hollywood movie. It's
Soldier One. And
Soldier One.
I've left it on my IMDb, guys, so.
Listen, hey, of course you
As
have.
As you should.
Of course you have. And then eventually, you know, like many, 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 many years from now in your obituary in The Guardian, they'll be like, Wrath of the Titans actor George Plankton.
Sure. Done. Like for ages, it was like the top credit on my CV. But even after Vikings, halfway through Versailles, it was still like Wrath of the first thing that appeared. I was like, I'm not taking this off.
I love it. I'm a big fan of that.
Oh,
right.
That's so funny.
That's brilliant. Okay, right. So let's go into the wonderful episode 6. Okay, so this is director Thomas Van Sant's first episode with us. We've had Christoph Schrue doing episode 3, 4, and 5, and now we are finally into Thomas Van Sant's first two episodes of season 1. And I will say that I've noticed a massive stylistic change between Christoph's and Thomas. I know that he actually brought on a lot of French historic accuracy, because the very first conversation I ever had with Thomas was, he sort of pulled me aside in the corridors of Brie and was like, have you seen this painting? And he showed me a painting that was on his phone, and it was like this table with Louis and Philippe and Henriette, and he was like, we're doing this, I've asked them to put this in the show. And I was like, very quickly, I was like, oh, you care deeply about I think he cared deeply about what he wasn't seeing in the rushes. He was right. Like, you're not clearly doing enough of the history side of things.
We are going to ask Maddie this question in a second, but I had that every director change, a director would come on set and be like, so this is everything that you weren't doing, and let's try and do that now, please. Idiot.
Bless you.
Go on, Maddie.
Yeah.
What was it like working with Thomas? Do you remember him coming on set? And
Well, how was Thomas with you?
Oh, I'm sure he was great. I think I was probably in episode 6 for one. I had one or two shooting days. So again, apologies for my
that's understandable. But no, because that's also just like how it goes. Like it's a lot of screen time for, because we shoot out, for the listeners, you know, we shoot out locations. It's not about, so you know, if we're shooting out your bedroom scenes, and they can get all your bedroom scenes shot in one day, and that's your block done, then that's you done for the block. They'll spread those scenes out over the 2 episodes, and it looks like you've been really busy. But if they can shoot you out in a day or two, they will. They'll absolutely shoot out the location, right? So that's probably, you know, your experience of Thomas was just 2 days, potentially.
2 days, yeah. I do remember some little memories from episode 6. With the scene where you two are having your discussion, where you're asking Louis if you can leave. You know, it's the sort of U-shaped table and we're all standing
around.
And you sort of have like a little sort of conflict. And I remember that. But I was sort of background then. So I just remember watching you guys and being in awe and having loads of fun, and Joe Sheridan being there and Steve Cummings having a really good time. But in terms of the directing, I think it was clear that I was nervous and still trying to form the character as I went, almost, you know, because I'd never really experienced having to prep so hard. And, you know, Evan was telling me that he had a playlist for Chevalier. And I was like, oh, shit, should I be doing that? Like, what would Sophie listen to? And like, thinking of how she would be and walk and what she would eat and what she thought before. And I was tested a lot with that, you know.
Yeah.
With a sort of a director saying, so where were you before, or how are you feeling really coming into this? And sometimes I would be like, oh God, yeah, you're right. I do really need to know the full journey and remember where I'm coming in and what scene this is and what it means to her. And I never really done that. You know, it was sort of like, in the first 2 episodes, maybe I'd read the scene and then sort of just see what scene it was, and then just sort of play it how I think it would be played without doing that background check. So I do remember having some talks with, like, come on, like, this is what you have to do. Let's sort of prep you really well and get you know, a really good storyline going.
So what's always, for me, episode, like, all of Sophie's storyline is, like, it's always been ingrained in my head about you and Beatrice and then later into Ty. But through the first 6 episodes, I had completely forgotten about Benoit, the storyline with Benoit the Builder. And
me too.
Yeah. Like when he rocked up, I was like, who's this guy? And then I was like, oh, it's sort of like a Montague Capulet love, you know, no, like love on the wrong side of the tracks sort of thing. But I had completely forgotten. Do explain this.
Was he called Tom?
Yeah, I'm talking to you. Do explain.
Tom.
Yeah.
It was so short-lived, you know, quick romance. It felt Yeah, there was no introduction to it or build up to it, or we didn't really know where he came from. He comes through the window, which, you know, is quite a strange way. I mean, I guess that's the way they did it back then. That was quite normal back then.
Through the window, through the wall. Yeah, that
through the window. But it was so fleeting, really. I mean, I don't know what you want me to explain. We had a cheeky kiss.
Nothing to explain. I wanted to exclaim that that whole thread of that storyline between you two had completely gone amiss. Anyway, right, we've got the opening scene of episode 6, which I remember. So it was really cold because obviously we started filming season 1.
Sorry. I have to pause you there. My laptop needs charging. Please, I'm very sorry. It's gonna die. I'm so sorry.
Oh, va bene. Tutti bene.
This is gonna go on Instagram, this bit. Wait. Just Madison. Okay. And on that note, this is me, Alexander Vlahos, your co-host, interrupting this wonderful episode with Madison Jaizani to remind you all, yes, it's that time, that we have a Patreon. The Patreon has been going so well so far, and we want to thank all of our supporters for making this happen. And just a reminder that this is still available. Patreon.com, go to the search bar, type in Con Versailles Shons, and you can see all the wonderful, wonderful opportunities that is there for the Versailles family to enjoy. Right, now let's see where we left off. So the opening scene, I always remember being it super cold, and I also think that the hanging of the workman as an opening hook is actually really, really well done, in my opinion. Like it still holds up. There's a couple of maybe some dodgy green screen, a little bit of some, you know, contentious moments, but I think it's actually a really great in. George, thoughts?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It was like, I think this ep for me was like, oh, he's got like bear problems, you know what I'm saying? It was the first episode that you go, oh, Louis's got quite a lot to really deal with and manage. Not that you didn't feel that, but yeah, basically.
Got a lot of haters.
Yeah, but the whole like workers thing throughout this episode was a good focal point, I thought.
Yeah, it felt like the episode had a theme, didn't it? It felt like, because sometimes the episodes are, sometimes it feels like they're kind of squashed. There's a lot of squeezing the storylines, you sort of jump from different, and that's really nice sometimes, but and also there's a sense of like trying to catch your breath. But episode 6, and I know we're actually bringing on Thomas Van Sant for episode 7. But these two episodes, 6 and 7, feel like they have a very, very clear, strong identity, don't they? Episode 6 feels like it's all leading up to Les Invalides and the workmen and Louis coming to sort of terms with the war that's just happened and making peace with that, and then really bringing in us into episode 7. There's an amazing montage moment as well that happens between all the letters being passed and dropped off in the salons.
Yes.
And I've written down in my notes, it suddenly feels like I'm watching an episode of Spooks, and coming from a David and Simon sort of Spooks MI5 sort of vibe, I was like, oh my God, like this is like exactly what would happen, you know, sort of like guns or bags or bullets or whatever. But it felt, I don't know, I was taken away from it not feeling like a period drama, even though everyone was in period drama clothes.
Yeah, I totally get that, actually. I agree.
He really thought about how to put this together in the sort of like descent into Louis's madness that we get into in episode 7. Like, I think you mentioned earlier that he started shooting it very differently. And I remember specifically in watching it back, I was like, wow, I really remember that on set. Him creating a camera move to like reflect Louis's mental state,
health, which was so there's many moments of it being up and then down.
Yeah.
Right? So the super close up to your face, quite high up. And he did that with Philippe as well.
one of these shots, hey,
MySpace selfie shots. Yeah.
Exactly. And like whenever Louis had like an uptick in his mental or like had an idea, like a light bulb, he'd use that.
The jib, right? And the camera, like the dolly jib sort of thing.
The dolly jib, and it would like go down and go down. Good technical term, George. No, but like watching episode 6, you go, oh yeah, I really remember that. I wonder if the viewers pick up on that. You know, like once you've been informed of it, you know it, you're watching it and you're like, oh, yeah, that's really cool, but.
So it was the thoughts, your sort of light bulb moments would be more of a downward shot looking up at you and then.
So basically like, yes.
What was the change?
So I remember Thomas distinctively describing it to me because I can remember like, for some reason, having for the first time, I think in you know 5 episodes or 6 episodes, the camera was incredibly close to my face. It was here for me, and I was like, "This has never been done." Like Christoph, we've just had 3 episodes of a mad German director having everything on a Steadicam. Suddenly, I've got the camera this close to my face, and I said to Thomas, "Like, what's going on? What's the angle? Like, what's the camera angle?" And he was saying that, "Oh, there's a moment for Philippe when the workman says, you know, the sun is setting." Which is like, oh, treason is happening, and we're gonna show that realization for the viewers. We're gonna bring the camera down as if Philippe is realizing it. And I was like, oh, so he's like, it's not necessarily spoon feeding. It's not. It's a iconography, isn't it? It's mise en scène. It's like, hey, we're gonna. It's almost like going to the audience like.
You know, yeah.
And for the listeners, that was me winking. Winking doesn't make any sense. But I think it's great.
That's like, quite fascinating, actually. Yeah, I love that.
I think it's thematically strong. That's what I feel about this whole episode.
Yeah.
Mm. No, it is. You
know? I also remember being fucking cold. Hated those scenes. Hated wearing the hat. Hated having the cane.
What time of year? It was the one just before Christmas, wasn't it?
Yeah, this was the block. This was the block Christmas, between, this and then November, that was Daniel Roby.
Yeah.
Was it? How do you guys remember that?
So we started filming in August, and then we had a 3-week break over Christmas, and then we came back in like mid-Jan to do Daniel Roby's last couple of episodes. But yeah, we filmed up until December the 7th or 8th, I think I remember. But like, it was cold.
Yeah, we had quite a lot of time off. Yeah, it was cold.
And I love also that they brought us back for season 2, and it was like, can you do exactly what you did, but quicker? And then in season 3, they were like, we're going to triple bank and do everything even quicker. Season one, we had 8 months to film.
We
finished in March and we started in August. Yeah. It's like, yeah, take your time. Do what you want. No double banking. Director finishes. Have a weekend. New director starts. Take your time. Take as long as you want with the scripts. Don't worry.
And I do remember that in season 2. Like, there was overlaps.
There was overlaps of banking. With the directors would come in.
Yeah, I forgot about
Mike
that.
Mike Bartlett and would come over. And that was kind of like, okay, this is a bit intense, but we're fine. And then I remember just season 3, just like, there was one point, there was two directors on set. Do you remember? Two directors on set for the A Man in the Iron Mask reveal.
Oh, you're
Ed Bazalgette,
right, yeah.
And I forget his name, but it was a crossover of blocks where they had to match the lot. My memory remembers the stupidest things, Maddie.
I don't think any of that is stupid. It's a skill that I do not have.
Do you know what? For that comment alone, you'll come back for this podcast.
Thank you. I need to start sort of keeping a diary so I can go back to these great days that have been lost and forgotten. I'm known for my memory.
We have, I've got this wonderful, so just made me laugh. We get our very, very first, the king! From Bon Ton, which could you go on, Maddie, do us another one.
The king,
unbelievable! You
I
got.
Ever want to see that again?
You became guttural. You became Scottish.
I did.
It's great. So we get our very first the king, which then ends up becoming a very Bon Ton thing to do. And also we've got some very gorgeous cinematography. I think you told me this, but there's a scene with Louvois, with the wonderful Joe Sheridan, as shouting to the workmen to get back to work. And I remember you, I think it was you telling me this, that you were like, you know, Joe is allergic to horses, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember me? We were in Unit Base in the trailers, and
yeah,
and you were like, I don't know how they're going to do this. Joe's allergic to horses, and the whole scene was just Louvre on top of a horse.
It was. He told me in a sort of like, this is going to be hilarious. I'm massively allergic to horses. And then the whole scene, I don't remember the scene. When I watched it back, I was like, I have no memory of that scene being shot. Because I was just thinking about his face erupting.
His whole face is just pink with blisters.
Bless him. Growing bigger and bigger. Wow, what a champ. That's not easy to do. And it's a decent sized monologue.
Was there anything on the show, Maddie, that was like that for you, where you were like, I cannot believe that they are asking me to do that? Oh, I mean, you were like forever getting into fountains, weren't you? Or was that just once?
That was once, but I do remember actually going back to my time with Amira, the scene where she is sort of teaching me the rules of the court and how she would like me to behave, what to do, what not to do, yes, what to say, what not to say. And it was the moment where she saps my private part.
That's right. I do remember this. I remember this. Not that I was there personally. Oh, yes, I remember this very well. No, I remember you. I remember. So, care to explain? Because this is really interesting for people that's listening, obviously.
Yeah. So that would have been a moment where I read it on the script, because that was a written scene, like a written piece that they wanted to get. And I remember reading that and being like, you know, being 18 and not really doing anything before, I was like, holy crap. I'm going to have to get my kit off. I don't know how I feel about this. And I had the option. I had the option of having it be my own private parts, but they would essentially put a wig on it.
Yes.
And because obviously back then everything was, you
know, bushy.
Razors.
Bushy.
So I had that option, which I would have to have like a fitting for my wig. Or they could get a double. And I did end up going for the double, which she was obviously knows what she's doing and was great, and she did it with ease. But that was a part, that whole day and shooting that bit, because she still had to, it still had to be a transition from me to the double, you know. So
yeah,
it was sort of a layover, whatever you want to call it. And I remember that being really terrifying. And I'm feeling kind of bad that I wanted a double and they would have to pay someone and feel, and I know now that is not, you say what you feel, but because I hadn't, you know, at that age, you're probably more of a yes man and you just want to appease and make sure that you're sort of, but I didn't feel comfortable and my mum was obviously.
Yeah. I mean, I remember very clearly that we were either having food in the canteen, and I remember there was a lot of us. I remember that it wasn't just like a conversation between me and you, Mads, but I remember you saying, hey, this is some coming up and I'm not particularly comfortable with this. And I just remember being like, yeah, of course, do everything in your power to make yourself feel comfortable, whether that is getting a wig, sort of like a, you know, like murking thing over or getting a body double and stuff like that. This is a perfect opportunity. We have Patreon viewers and questions coming in from our subscribers, and we have an amazing question from Darlene, and she says, Alex recounted in a previous episode that he was asked to tongue someone who didn't know it was coming. So that was when Christoph asked me to just put my tongue in Evan's mouth, and you know, I just went, yeah, fine, sure. As actors, if you say no and you don't get the job or you could lose it, is there anything that each of you could have been asked to do that you would have refused? So Mads, like, you know, that's a prime example, but I don't, George, is there anything that you've done, maybe not Versailles related, but that either you said flat out no, and then you've gone, ooh, maybe this is, or Mads, anything that you've done on CW with that, you know, has there been things where you've put your hand up and gone, actually, maybe this is contentious?
Not really for me, because CW is you know, it's pretty PC work. It was all quite, you know, nicey-nice. They told me, like, one day before shooting that they decided my character was going to be gay, which I, you know, was happy either way. It didn't matter to me. But it was funny, you know, how information gets passed and you're like, oh,
right, pivot, or okay, well, sure. let's now reframe how I feel about this character, because all along, through the audition process with Nancy Drew, I was actually meant, I did a chemistry test with Alex Saxon, and you know, I had this idea of who this character was going to be, and then it shifted completely because now it was about my character coming out. So that, having that weight, was was never going to say no to that, obviously, and I thought that was a great idea, actually, for the character and something different and fresh to bring to the table, which, you know, that recognition wasn't being shown in the show. But that was, like, one of those moments where it's like, okay, well, I've just rehearsed and got this idea of who this character is, and now it's completely different. She has a secret, and she feels uncomfortable, yeah. And now it's sort of about coming out. So that was sort of the only hurdle with the character development in CW. But I've never I think Masai was probably the things that came most challenging, because obviously I duped Cassell, and you know, the rape scene
for sure
was hard to do, and that was like, oh, how are we going to orchestrate this? This is the first time I've got to choreograph a scene that's really gnarly with Pip Torrin, who obviously probably felt quite uncomfortable himself and like wanted to make sure I was okay, because I was younger than some of his daughters. I think it was just like, yeah. You know, for him it's like he looked at me as, you know, it just was all very strange, but we managed to do it with ease.
What about you, George? Has there ever been a point where you've, you know, on any job really, that you've said, you know, no?
I have more examples of times that I definitely should have said no, right. And didn't, and then regret it. I mean, the one is sort of similar vein to Maddie's, but just like the complete opposite was, I think it was with Thomas. I think we might be getting to it in ep 7, ep 8. Oh. Obviously, there's a lot of Louis gallivanting around his bedroom with not much on. And I don't know if we've already talked about this with the listeners, but when you have to do nudity on screen, men have to wear,
it's a modesty pouch, but we all call it a cock sock.
Brilliant.
Thanks.
So this modesty pouch is literally like a medieval money bag. I wish I like had one to hand. Can you imagine if I had one to hand?
Can you imagine if you're like, exhibit A.
You basically, you know when you start off on a story and you think, too late. So like you have to pop everything into this medieval money bag and then like tie the drawstring tight around it. So there was a shot, big wide shot of Louis's bedroom where they wanted Louis to vault out of bed. And we'd done a couple of takes and like, I think it was Toma, his episode, or maybe it was Daniel Roby, but you could see people like whispered chats like, sacre bleu. And, I walked over, I was like, what's wrong? Is this just something wrong? Is we're not getting the shot? And they were like, well, we just, you know, we see the, you know, and I don't know what came over me. I was just like, well, I'll take it off. It'll be fine. And everyone, you know, people are usually busy on set. And I said it and everyone, the boom operators were like, what? And he just, really? I was like, yeah, I can do this. I'll take it off. People get naked in cinema all the time. I will. So here we go. It's off. Let's roll. And it was like my one moment trying to be like Philippe, I guess. And they were like, right, cool, let's roll then. And then Numbnuts here, like vaults out. And when I say vault, like it was like one of those, you know, like where you throw yourself off the end of the bed.
Yeah.
Just like legs.
Akimbo,
like
the whole thing.
In every direction. Yeah.
Starfish. Just.
And yeah.
Yeah.
I think we did two or three takes. Right. And I was like, God, this is so liberating. It's just so wonderful. What an amazing thing that I've done.
What an amazing thing I've done.
Probably my best work on the show. And it's completely cut.
Completely
so
cut from the episode.
I don't know how to read into that. I don't know what to think from the fact that it's been cut, you know? Like, well, it's probably too graphic. But it was very, I found it very insulting. Anyway.
My one is also very...
I love it.
Kind of similar, kind of not, was that... So it's episode... episode one of season two, it's when the Chevalier gets reunited with Philippe and they're in Saint-Cloud together. And in the opening, in the script, it was Chevalier and Philippe are post-coital. That's the opening of the scene. So like they're post-coital. They've just had sex, but this didn't quite work for the energy of the scene. So I think, and it was Thomas. Thomas directed the first four episodes of season two. He was like, I think I just need a little bit of something from you guys and then you can roll off each other to start the, to start the scene. So Philippe is always bottom. Chevalier's always top. So Evan's, I've got my legs spread apart. Evan's between me, placed between me. But we've got our bottoms on, you know, our sort of like our, you know, pantaloons or whatever. And then the scene started just developing very, very slowly into like, well, it'd be quite good to see them so in love. But Philippe's so excited to see Chevalier back. So maybe we do a little bit of, you know, let's do a little bit of action just to get us into it, you know. And then it goes, so it went from like 0 seconds, 0.1 second of just noise to then maybe 2 seconds of thrusting. Do you know what? Why don't we, over here looks really good. So then it just became a very long scene where it ended up just developing into just me and Evan having sex.
Right?
But the best thing was then obviously because then we couldn't have the pantaloons on, we had to be naked, right? So then we both have our modesty pouches on. And then Thomas has this great idea, this beautiful wide shot where it's like the bed's in the middle of the frame. Very Wes Anderson, very symmetry, you know? So we've got two legs here and then you've got Evan here, you know, like that. And this beautiful mid-frame. And then Evan departs post-sex and we go, cut. And then, guys, we can see your modesty pouches. We can see both of your cock socks. So then...
We
had to take them off. So this is why Evan was my best man at my wedding, because he's seen more of me than Julie has. My wife. Yeah, he had to rest his private parts between my buttocks. But the best thing about this then is that Pierre-Yves, who was a DOP for the day on that thing, came in and said, "I need to light 5 minutes." So I'm starfished on the bed and Evan's lying on top of me. And for 5 minutes, we just have to talk. Without I'm just lying there going, "Hey man, you good?" He's like, "Yeah, yeah. What are you doing tonight?" "I don't know. Do you want to go to a restaurant?" "Yeah, go."
Like that scene from Love Actually.
We are butt naked. Like that scene in Love Actually.
Wow.
Yeah. But then again, it's not to make this about, it's not a Me Too thing. It's not this thing. It's just something that just developed over time. And I guess, right. And I know that if it would happen this day and age, it would, I know that I would be much more wiser and much more stern with just, you know, "No, you don't need 5 minutes. You can get people in," or "No, you don't, you know," but it just said yes. Just said yes. You know?
I think, yeah, well, because up till kind of Me Too, like I think 2017, 2018, very much the vibe that I found on sets before then was, how does the actor feel? Let's be led by the actor. And of course you're in this state where you're like, or particularly me, but loads of actors are in this state that they just desperately want to do anything that they can to help. So, you know, you're trying to make the day work, the set work, the environment work. So if Pierre-Yves needs to light for 5 minutes, then and you need to light us on the bed, we'll stay on the bed.
Well, especially number one and number two on the call sheet. That's what I've always believed, is that if you're one and two, you have a responsibility to not throw your toys out of the pram. Get on with it.
Yeah.
Get the crew on.
I think
on
the
time,
difference,
you know?
Yeah. The difference is like in the years just after Versailles, it's now all of that strict protocol that's come in. It's great because now there's the framework that everyone adheres to. We're not just like adhering to people who want to vault out of beds without anything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
Mads, you end up having, you know, you have a scene later on in season three with Ty. Obviously you have your scene in season two with Pip. We didn't have sexual coordinators? Intimacy coordinators. You know, would you have thought was that something, like, do you look back on Versailles and think, God, I wish we had had them? Where's your viewpoint on all that thing?
I think honestly, probably, yeah. Just also, I know I keep saying it, but because of my age.
Yeah, for sure.
I think I was in I could have been in a really vulnerable state where I'm not on the side necessarily, but any show where I could have maybe been taken advantage of or said something that, you know, if I had a sort of second pair of eyes and that they would say, no, I don't think you should do that. But like you said, it was, I'd heard these stories of actors being troublesome on set, and everyone, you know, is a, you know, any actor I heard of, someone would go, oh, apparently he's a prick. He'd be like, oh, he's got a bad reputation as well. So I'd heard all these stories, and I thought that that was connected to saying no to things, you know, that they must have been difficult and not getting people home on time and causing trouble and just being a little bit annoying. And so for me, it was anything that anyone said, you say yes. So, yeah, I think I would have appreciated it, especially with the scene with Ty, because that was the first time that I had to be naked with the camera on my naked body.
Yeah.
And for me to be on top, you know, it's I'm leading the way. And that was absolutely effing terrifying, because it went on for probably about 15 minutes and I'm so out of breath and I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah. You know, I wasn't well known in the bedroom. You know, I didn't really have the skill set. I was quite new to it all.
Let's maneuver our way beautifully away from this conversation, because otherwise we're going to go down to a bigger rabbit hole. But there's a lovely scene, which is between Sophie, yourself, Maddie, and Beatrice, finding out the truth about your family history in episode 6. And it's really beautifully done. And I always remember those scenes in Bree being really sort of claustrophobic, because the set looks bigger on camera than it actually is. And you always end up having to try and figure out different ways of shooting in those scenes, because if you feel like you're just repeating the same action. Do you remember that scene with Amira? Do you remember, because you got yourself into a really sort of high octane, full of sort of temperance and rage state at the start of it. So how was that with Amira?
It was good, but I think Amira was really good at winding you up, actually. You know, there was another scene further down where she slaps me, and we'd had a couple of slaps where we were like, let's go. And I think we really managed to create some tension between us and get the energy up. But yeah, the camera was really close from doing all these close-ups. Like now I know it was the style of the episode, really, in some ways. But that was the first time that I had to step it up an octave and be sort of quite stressed and show some anger, whereas before it was quite sweet and lovely. And I remember Amira getting me riled up. And also we'd had rehearsals where it was like, this has to be, you know, a really intense scene. It's terrifying, you know, we could be killed. Mm. So we worked really well in creating that. That, you know, intensity.
Yeah. I mean, it works so well. It's like it's the boiling point, you can tell, between, you know, what's then the fallout that will happen in the later episodes. There's a great scene, George, that I have to sort of comment on, which is the Les Invalides scene, which is the Louis' birth of the hospital and the creation of Les Invalides. The coin, you know, passing the coin scene and stuff like that. Do you remember this moment being applauded by the crew? There's a moment that happens in that scene. So there's a beautiful moment where the coin is introduced, the medal, and introduce it to Philippe, and then I take it off you and I hold it up, and you're behind the coin. And for the listeners, there's a thing called like wrap focus, which is a focus puller that's next to the camera who pulls focus between the focal points between where the director would like you to land. And this was a very short depth field. So my hand, the coin, your face back to the coin. But the coin and my hand is a variable. It moves. I can't land it in the same spot every time. You know, I can't exactly nail 10 inches or whatever like that all the time. And Francois? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a focus puller that didn't use digital cameras. Do you remember this, Maddie? He was a beautiful man, but he would do it all by eye. Everything was by eye, the focus pulling. He never had a monitor. He didn't have to like put a tape measure down. Everything was by eye. And I remember this moment so specifically. I pull up the coin and the camera's here and it goes from the coin to George's face back to the coin. And people just started applauding because it was just, he had 0.2 millimeters of just like of depth to work with, and my hand is moving constantly because it's variable, and he nails it. Do you remember that?
I mean, I do remember there being like a wow, wasn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I remember him saying that he that's how they trained as focus pullers, was by sight, and they would, because every lens has a different amount of turn on the wheel as well. So they would be in rooms with cameras and they would just practice looking at the floor. You'd always see him running alongside the camera and he'd always be looking at the floor and visualizing like
the depth
the grids
of field,
that he trained
right?
yeah. on, like how long, how many feet between the camera and the face, and just like
wow.
judging it like that.
Because he told me, I remember him telling me he knew the same story where he was in the garden or he had a tape measure out and he would throw an object and he would wrap focus to the object. Do you remember not to tell you this?
No, I didn't.
So he told me the story about how he learned to train when he was younger was that he had a massive tape measure out in the garden and he would just throw an object and then he would wrap focus to where that object, and then he took the tape measure away and then he'd throw an object and he would get it bang on every time.
Wow.
Like just by eye.
It's amazing.
And I'm like, because now obviously we all work with, you know, a lot of digital focus pullers who have a screen that helps them get into focus. You know, there's like a line sort of thing, right? And they can do it all by
it's
eye.
Still one of the hardest jobs 100% on the set, but it's infinitely easier with a screen.
Don't come at me, but this guy was amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish I knew that then, because that is very, very cool.
Yeah. And then we go into the end of the episode, which has the weird dream fever sequence to the end of the episode, which is and there's a big Philippe stabbing everyone. But right, we're coming to the end of the episode, and how we do this, Maddie, is that we have these great lines of dialogue that is said throughout different characters, and Sophie has an amazing line of dialogue, and I'm going to get you to read it afterwards to finish off the episode, to say goodbye. Okay, we'll give you a cue, don't worry. So we have great lines of dialogue, and we've got one from Bontemps, which is, as a matter of fact, I believe it was a broom cupboard, which is Bontemps saying that to Cassel. George, you got the next one?
Louis has a line, all stories must come to an end.
Very good, when he talks about to Louise de Valier. We've got the workman talking to Philippe and Chevalier saying, the sun is setting, which I think was brilliantly done. George, you want to take one of Philippe's lines?
Another? Oh, yeah, I'd love to, Philippe. Here we go. If you wish to see me, you can send up a firework.
And that was lovely.
I love that.
I love that one. I love saying that one. And then we also have the dum-dum-dum moment of the episode, which is, I am expecting a child from Henriette. Oh, go on, George. You did Philippe so brilliantly last time. Have this next one.
You're more thorn than rose. You know that.
Which is a very good...
I love it. I mean, we need to remake the series. I'm playing Philippe.
And then we've got Bontemps going, don't touch! To the workmen in the hall. I love that. And then also there's the great line from the workman, which is brilliant. He looks in the mirror.
God.
And he goes, is that me? God, I'm ugly. And I just thought, that's brilliant.
So good.
But the line to finish the episode and to say thank you to Madison Jaizani for coming on for episode 6, she's been absolutely perfect, is that you say, I don't know who I am, my own mother won't even tell me. Could we get you to say that, Maddie, to sign us off the episode?
Oh, I don't know who I am. My mother won't even tell me.
Yay! Woo!
Thank you so much,
Madison
Maddie.
Jaizani, everyone!
Woo! Thank you so much. What a pleasure.
You've been an absolute joy, and we will get you back because you did well.
We've just scratched the surface.
Yeah, I still got it.
Love you.
Thank you so much.
Well, well, well. It's been a long time for episode. Do you want to say a well? You can say a well. We've taken our time getting episode 6 ready, haven't we? We've had a little bit of a holiday. Unintentional.
Well,
as, you know, life gets in the way. Where are you in the world right now, George?
Italia.
And I'm in Paris. And Madison, by the way, was in Vancouver. And Nikki is in Germany. So a truly international podcast.
Amazing.
Amazing, right? Like, you know, you couldn't...
Couldn't
force this to happen. But just because we're all so, so busy. Anyway, that was... How did you find that? I really, really love... Forget how brilliant and full of energy Maddie is.
Yeah, she's a force to be reckoned with, I'm gobsmacked at how she was that young on the show. I never knew that. Genuinely, I didn't. I thought she was like in her mid-20s.
Yeah,
which is.
I just think she it's that weird thing, isn't it? We've talked about it, but like the idea of what you present to actually what you're feeling, very different on the set.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The fact that, you know, we've always believed, you know, that I've always believed that you've always had this immense sense of confidence on set and, you know, all this sort of, you know, whatever we think of other people as what's going on set is completely the opposite, really. Because, you know, what, you know, listening to Maddie the standard, she was going through a lot, wasn't she?
Yeah, totally. It's, yeah. Amazing. What an amazing chat. Amazing episode.
Great. It's great. And we're in the tail end.
Loved
we're,
it.
In, we're in the end game now, George. We're coming up to...
We are. I'd not thought about that.
Well, only for season one, darling. You're not going to... Unless you want to...
No, sure.
It's not, it doesn't just end in
episode
10.
No.
We're aiming for episode 30, darling. We've got the wonderful Thomas Van Sant coming up next. Who's so excited to come on. So we'll be finally getting a director's perspective. But... before we say goodbye to everyone, we have to say thank you to the Patreon listeners and viewers.
Yes.
So, would you like to go? Let's change it up. Why don't you say the first three, and I'll say the last three, just to mix it up.
So, thank you so much to our fabulous Patreon supporters, Estelle, Darlene. Thank you for the question, Darlene, as well.
Very good.
In amongst the episode, and Nicole
and Daniela. And Karin and Nadra, we couldn't do this without you. Thank you so much for your support and for your help. And if you guys are listening and watching and want to continue and help us on the Patreon, then go to www.patreon.com/conversations. George, I wish you all the best with your week of filming.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I can't wait. I wish you all the best.
That's how we should end it. Just you say... thank you. And then just the credits roll.
That's it. That's it. Thank you.
Hole in my sock.
Bye.